Okay, so we continue with optogenetics, and so far you heard a lot about the molecule and in general photoreceptors and RPE. But what I like to talk about is that the retina is a more complicated machine, and I think much of what we are missing now, it's built of many different cell types. And much what we are missing now for optogenetics, but not only optogenetics, for any gene therapy, is have a device with 80 elements, and we would try to target them with single injection of viruses, not only in mouse, but in primates and humans. And this is a great challenge for both optogenetics and for gene therapy because of two reasons. One reason is safety. What you don't want is express a protein in a cell that was not expressed there, because these has biological activities. And the second, what you don't want to express, for example, an external molecule with all sorts of cell types where you can increase immune reaction. And the second is efficacy. What I mean by efficacy is truly biological efficacy. The retina is a computer that every cell has a role. So if you want to restore a function, you have to carefully think where you put your optogenic sensor or where you want to restore function to have a biologically relevant output. So this will be the theme of my talk today, and I would like to very briefly introduce you the retina as I see it. So vision is operates on videos that enter your eye. These are captured by the retina. Flows then to a number of visual nuclei, but for perception, the lateral geniculate nucleus is the most important one. And from here to the primary visual cortex and a number of other cortices. And really, vision is created up here, but interestingly, most diseases that lead to visual dysfunction are down here. And for a very simple reason in my what I argue, is that the retina is a quite inflexible machine that can adapt, it can compute, but it's very hard, it's not very plastic in a sense of reorganization. And a cortex is immensely plastic. So it's no wonder that most of the genetic diseases are hitting at the retina. Now, the job of the retina is really to create a number of visual features that is relevant for the visual cortex to look at. And these are developed during evolution. There are 20 or 30 of them in all mammals, as far as we understand. And so the retina is sort of pulling out these different features. If you zoom into the retina, and this was already done by Cahal, you see a zoo of different morphologies. And this is the basic observation of Cahal, one of the basic observations. And the second observation of Cahal was that he figured that in every point in the retina, you can see the same morphologies over and over again. So we can talk about the concept of cell types. And this cell type concept, that's the unit of retinal function. And what I like to argue today in my talk, and this should be the target for any kind of therapy. As I told you, safety and efficacy, biological efficacy, one reason. But we also know that essentially every disease we can think of is cell type specific. Cell type specific for two reasons. One, that the genetic diseases are hitting a lot of the time cell type specific genes. But in cases when they are hitting a cell type non-specific genes, even then we find that the degeneration is specific for a cell type. Because of selective vulnerability, they have really different genetic compositions. So very briefly, I'd like to show you how these cell types organize together in circuits. The output cell of the retina is a single ganglion cell, which has a small number of cells connected to it. It starts with a photoreceptor, bipolar cells, and emacrine cells. And they come in a large number of variety, and a given ganglion cell selects few of those in its own circuitry. The photoreceptor input is a changing light intensity over time, and the output of the ganglion cell are very precisely produced timed spikes that flow towards the brain. So this is a little circuitry, which are simplified here by numbers. These are the individual cell types. And this little circuitry is watching one spot in the scene, and then the circuitry is repeated across the retina, forming a mosaic of circuit modules. And this mosaic of circuit modules indeed produces or pulls out a feature from the visual scene. It listens to this video, and then and the output is another video, is a neuronal video that it broadcasts towards the LGN and other nuclei. Now, in mammalian retinas, we have 20 or 30 such mosaics very neatly arranged in the retina. And therefore, there are around 20 or 30 representations that leave the retina. In cases of genetic diseases of photoreceptors, we heard retinitis pigmentosa, which is a collection of diseases, and Leber congenital amaurosis, we heard about. The retina is in a state when there are usually no rod photoreceptors. The cone photoreceptors lost their light sensitivity and slowly degenerating, but much of the circuitry, the other cell types, and there are around 80 different cell types in the retina, they are, I wouldn't say intact, but at least, you know, 50% is around. So that creates a condition for restoring vision, making some of these cells artificially light sensitive. And this is the concept of optogenetic therapy. We heard about the different sensors, chenorhodopsins and halorhodopsin family. And the key idea is to selectively target cell types to make them light sensitive by understanding the circuitry and coming up with strategies which cell types to target. The retina, broadly speaking, has really two different modalities. One is are the on cells. There are cells that are respond to increasing contrast, and the off cells to decreasing contrast, and we have these two sensors to complement these different modalities. So today I would like to talk about not what was achieved in optogenetics, which we will hear later, but what is really the road ahead. And I think there are three, at least three different ways to go. There are more, but three I will address today. And one is, to me, that is very close to my heart, is targeting cell types, which I think is very important because it goes beyond the limits of optogenetics to all genetic therapy. The second one is that how we increase sensitivity. We heard that we are limited by the molecule, so we will have to come up with different principles. And the third one is building human disease models, which will help us to test genetic approaches to restore vision in a test condition. And the key point here is that indeed the human retina and the primate retina is really different from the mouse retina, and it's not enough that we restore vision to mice. There is still large steps to come to humans. So I start with cell type targeting, and the key concept of cell type targeting is that wherever we look in the nervous system, we find cells with different morphologies. They're hooked up in local circuits. And we found over the last 5 to 10 years in many different parts of the brain that if a cell type is morphologically different, we can see it has a unique gene expression pattern, at least locally unique. There's a barcode for gene expression, find many cell type specific genes. And I'd like to briefly show how we came to this conclusion, but there are a number of other studies that concluded similarly. We get lucky a number of years ago, indeed in 2005, that NIH has a very large program with Nathaniel Hines at Rockefeller University to create a very large number of mouse lines expressing GFP from different promoters. And at that time, people were not very worried about cell types. So we get lucky that Nat Hines sent us in the post around 3,000 eyes to Basel, which we reconstructed them in 3D in an automated fashion, labeling for GFP as well as other markers. And we found around 100 different lines in which either single cell type or combination of them were specifically labeled. So from this, Sandra Siegert and Brigitte Gross chose around 30 lines. They sorted out the cells using FACS and determined the gene expression pattern, getting an atlas of cell type transcriptomes. And what really hit us at that time, that whenever we had a mouse line which has a specific cell type labeled, we found at least 20, 30 genes which were uniquely expressed within the retina. It doesn't. It means that some of the genes expressed in other parts of the brain or your liver or somewhere else, but within the retina, it was unique. And this we used now to find different genetic diseases that localize to cell types. But I would like to concentrate on another work, which is not yet published, in which we asked the reverse question: can we use this internal barcode, genetic barcode, to create viruses that can smell the genetics of a cell type to uniquely express the gene? So what we have done is learned a lot about the enhancer, the open chromatin, and other states of these cells. And using a heuristics and some design, we built several hundred AVs with the different synthetic enhancers, hoping to screen for cell type specific expression. And indeed, using this screen, there's a lot of hits. One out of 10, actually, when we screen through in mice, hit. But once you have a lot of N, you start to get a lot of cell type very cleanly. So I'd like to just show you some example how cleanly we can target a cell type with a single injection in mice. For example, here, you wanted to target cones. And this is a promoter that labels essentially 80% of the cones specifically with a single injection until the rest of the life of the mouse. Here is another promoter which is targeting rods. And now we have some promoters that are targeting all the rods, almost all the rods, 90% of the rods, but none of the cones, although it's a very close cell type. And we can show this complete specificity. One point is very important about cell type targeting, that whenever you go with a gene therapy, you want to achieve cell type targeting, but also you want to achieve a particular level of gene expression. So what we have done with several of these promoters, we start to play around them and created a large number of mutants that can target, again, only rods, but in different gene expression graduation. So some of them, for example, rods, we have around 30 different vectors, some of them expressing very large amount, some of them low amounts, and in between. And this will be very important because you don't know ahead of time what is the level required. Sometimes you require very high level, sometimes low, you don't know. But if you can try two or three out, it could guarantee that you can get in a closer, it's like dosing a drug. In this case, you can dose your protein. Here's another example that we wanted to target both rods and cones. So this is very nicely target both rods and cones. Then we have an example of A2 amacrine cells, completely specifically, again, a single injection hits A2 amacrine cells. Here's another example of many ganglion cells. In this is case non-selective. We can also target selectively different ganglion cell types. I only show you a few images. Or here is, for example, Müller cells exclusively can target. And here again, we have more than 10 different promoters. At two different extent, we can express high, low, or medium amounts. So these were just a few examples from this library. And of course, the question is that does it work the same way in primates and human retinas? And the answer is no, and you have to screen again. So we have a large ongoing screen in primates. And what we are learning very interestingly, and as well as in human retinas, postmortem retinas with a preparation developed by Serge Picot, and we are learning a very interesting lesson, namely that the genes that express both in primates and mice, in the same way, the targeted cell type, they will very likely express the same in humans. So there's an interesting lesson that probably the best promoters to find are the ones that working across species because they are highly conserved. There, of course, will be some cell type which don't exist in mouse, just in primates and humans, but I would urge to really try out both in humans and primates to assure the conservation and efficacy of the promoter. Now, so we have now a library of promoters, and now for optogenetics, we have to come up with the cell types that we would like to target. And there are several ways to go, and many, many years ago, we listed five different ways to go. Either targeting the remaining cones, it's a work by Jens Dübel and Volker Buskamp in my lab, off bipolar cells, or specifically on bipolar cells. It was work by Pamela Lagali, the A2 amacrine cells, or ganglion cells. And in mouse now, we can really target all of them with very high efficacy. Then all of them, indeed, we showed that if you put chernodopsin, you can restore vision. You get the off pathway, the on pathway. You get the both the on-off pathway to these cells. You can get, again, both of them here. And with ganglion cells, we are not yet selective. And working together with the Institute of José Sahel, especially with Serge Picot and Denise Dalcara, we, at least with four with different approaches, would like to march to reach human trials. And the very first one is on the way, which we'll hear later about. And just like to mention, there are several steps one has to go through. Want to show efficacy in the retina, then you have to show behaviorally in mice. Then we capitalized on the Serge's remarkable development of the human retina preparation that he can keep alive. And we can nowadays we can keep much longer alive than earlier times. And now working with Arnold Szabó in Budapest, we can 100 days keep a postmortem retina. So we just very recently put several hundred different AVs in different chunks, so we have a complete description of these promoters in human in vitro. And finally, José Sahel's, and there are studies ongoing in primates, and José Sahel's department is working for patient selection to really find for each of these different targeting methods the best patient that fits the patient that required a different targeting method that will be differ from mutation to mutation, probably from disease condition to disease condition. And finally, we work with GenSight Biologics to come up with really specific and safe therapies. Now, this is what is ongoing, and there are and the second challenge ahead. One is to get better cell type targeting. The second one is to increase the sensitivity of the procedure. And we heard about Ernst Bamberg, and that indeed it's very hard to increase the sensitivity of chernodopsin and heterodopsin without degrading the temporal resolution of the sensor. But there are several ways to increase sensitivity. One is by working on the sensors. That might be not so easy. But the second one is working on expression amount. And so one part of it is fully promoters, but the second one, that photoreceptors invented a structure that allows them to express 100 times more genes than other cells. And that is the outer segment, this massive amount of membrane that is folded in the outer segment. So several years ago, we asked ourselves that perhaps what we could do is just build more membranes. So the question, how to build more membranes? We looked in the literature. What is the pathway that keeps the outer segments? And we really went away with zero idea. There was simply not known what are the molecules that maintain outer segments. This is continuously renewed. And we worked several years on it and went away empty-handed, exactly with zero output, until we get lucky. And that's always how research works, at least in my lab, that none of the hypotheses work that we try, but luck often comes when needed. And so what the luck was that we have been working with a set of molecules called microRNAs. And I don't explain you why I've been working with microRNAs, but we set up a program to individually delete all microRNAs in adult different cell types. We were starting to delete it at least in 10 different cell types. And very first one was actually cones, because we had a good CRILAT. So we deleted the microRNAs, all microRNAs in an adult mouse. And what we find amusingly, that the outer segment in a month shortened to non-existing, but the cell body remained alive for for at least 2-3 months after. And then we started to wonder which microRNA is needed for the maintenance of outer segment, and we were able to resubstitute one by one different microRNAs to learn that this microRNA 182, 183 completely preserved the outer segment. So this is just an insight into a class of RNAs, but we thought to ask the question whether we can use them constructively, these microRNAs. And it turned into a culture system in mice that was at that time developed by Yoshiki Sasai You heard about that before. And Yoshiki's major achievement was that he realized that using a certain amount of different molecules, he was able to observe the outgrowth of optic cups from this mass of differentiating cells. And when he stained them from opsins, rhodopsin, and for bipolar marker and ganglion cell marker, he could find these cells. But that time, indeed, we looked very carefully. We repeated them, and there was no evidence for outer segment, and no one could record light responses from these structures. So we thought that simply we try out these microRNA, we put them into viruses, and it was Jacek Kroll who simply dropped them onto these cultures and observed the massive outgrowth of membranes once we added this microRNA. You can see here in much larger. Indeed, we also showed that normally these microRNAs, after a long time of growth, are induced in these cultures, so leads to the outgrowth, at least to the inner segment, and when we block them, we can completely abolish that. So we know that it's required in these conditions. And then, of course, you cannot tell there is an outer segment based on light microscopy. Indeed, we several times miss them. It's just not possible. But then you do electron microscopy, and you can very nicely see these developing outer segments. And using different procedures, we can get longer and longer ones. Of course, an outer segment, this is not enough to create a large response. Many things could go wrong. So then Tomasz Sikra in my lab started to patch these cells to ask if he can observe light responses. And indeed, in 25% of the cells, he randomly patched. We got a very nice light response. This is somewhat, it appears like more like a rod-like light response. Nevertheless, is a typical, you know, 1 or 2 millivolt deep hyperpolarization that then returns. So we don't yet know how to grow outer segment. All what I know, we know that there is a molecule that necessary for them. It's involved in the process. And in the literature, we have learned there's a lot of work on how to keep the outer segments not degenerating. For example, RDCVS, Basigin-1, NRF2, and R molecules that helping cones not to lose their outer segments. And what we've been thinking that some of these might be able to preserve light responses, but depending on the stage, if we combine these molecules, including our microRNAs, with optogenetic therapy, perhaps you can result in better light sensitivity, and something that we are currently testing. So the last point I'd like to talk about is disease models. So far, the only disease, the animals where we have good disease model for the variety of genetic diseases is the mice, because we can engineer them easily to create different models. The problem with relying on mice is that initially it's a great model, because we can show proof of principles. But what we learned is that when we try to optimize our vectors, turns out to be you can get better and better treating mice. It doesn't mean you're getting better and better vectors for primates and humans. So we have to treat this with a certain distance, so we can achieve so far from mice, but we would need really human disease models. And we heard about that one way to go is to start with iPS cells and develop retinas from iPS cells, because it's very easy to engineer them. And for us, the critical question was, can we really, we are interested in disease models for photoreceptors, but can we achieve really good-looking cone photoreceptors? A marker, a single marker for cone photoreceptors is not enough. They have a specific morphology. Indeed, they have a gene expression pattern, so we ensure that these are close to the normal one. So we, as many other people, started to engineer these iPS-derived, retinoids. Here you can see a half centimeter by half centimeter human retinoid that is growing. This is a sheet of the retina. And at early times, what you see is that you see photoreceptors, ganglion cells, and some cells inside, but it really, these photoreceptors has not the morphology that you want. So what we started to work on, how to, from this stage, how to optimize to get cone photoreceptors, which are really looking and functioning like cone photoreceptors, and going through a large number of iterations with different molecules to use, we now arrive to cone photoreceptors with beautiful synaptic terminals, inner segments, very short output. We don't yet know if this is an outer segment. It's very likely not. But then we can use different markers first, as a first attempt, to show that, for example, all of them has a cilium. So this preparation is perfect for ciliary diseases. Indeed, in a collaboration with Novartis, we engineer essentially all existing ciliary diseases in these embryo structures to learn how this what are the key factors for degeneration. We can also look at the output, and we can usually see a ribbon synapses. These are just few markers, but recently we did a single level gene expression for several hundred of these cells, showing indeed that the gene expression is very close to normal human cone gene expression. So I like to, and then we have thought a lot, what is the way to look at diseases, and went through several iterations. I'd like to share with you what we learned. So first we took patient-derived cells, turned them to the iPS, and we really didn't get good results. And the particular problem is the following, that every time you start, you make an iPS cell, that's a unique initial condition. If you make a photoreceptor, I would say 3 out of 50 cases, you can make these really remarkable, nice cones with a gene expression that mimics the human gene expression. Many cases, you get partials here and there, half cone, half rod. So we learned that the way to go, for us at least, is to choose 2 or 3 lines, which we repeatedly can make similar cones, and then engineer a mutation into those lines, and this start to behave as a transgenic mouse. So we can label with GFP and other ways, that cones or rods, whatever you want, in that specific starter line, and then engineer in the disease. And this way, you can sort cells, you can specifically have a control and the disease mutation, and you can look for restoration of function or disease mechanism. So this is the point I would like to stop. And maybe summarizing, so there are a number of challenges ahead. One is to get completely cell type specific gene expression at different levels in human and primate retinas following the mouse work. The second one is thinking about working with RDCVS, microRNAs, and other molecules to keep the outer segment, at least some membrane around. And then the third one is having different disease model. There are other challenges that I haven't talked about, but very important to address in the future. And one of the key one is really moving away from visible light into infrared light. And I hope in the next year we will see some advance in that front as well. At this point, I'd like to thank a lot of the people in my lab who contributed, past members and collaborators, and especially José Sahel, Serge Picot, and Denise, and Genzeit, whom together we would like to see this coming to patients. Thank you very much.